From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. President Donald Trump this week triumphantly hosted the signing of a deal between Arab nations and Israel at the White House. The United Arab Emirates and Bahrain agreed to normalize diplomatic relations with Israel, a nation that they hadn't actually been battling with in any form, in exchange for a promise of future weapon sales from the U.S. But Trump is casting the agreement as a, quote, dawn of a new Middle East. Generally, U.S. presidents have framed Middle East foreign policy as centering on Israel and the Palestinian territories, but Palestinians have been left out of the equation. During remarks to the press about aid to Palestinians, Trump said, if they're not going to speak well of us, we're not going to be involved. Outside the White House, on Black Lives Matter Plaza, a coalition of 50 peace groups held a protest calling for no normalization of relations with Israel. One of those activists was my guest, Huwaida Arraf, Palestinian-American lawyer and human rights activist, co-founder of the International Solidarity Movement, former chair of the Free Gaza Movement, currently our Palestine and Refugees correspondent. Welcome to the program, Huwaida.
Thank you. It's good to be with you, Sonali.
So before we get to what happened outside the White House on Tuesday, let's talk about what happened inside. It made for a great photo opportunity, and Trump is upholding this agreement that's been called the Abraham Accords as a shining example of a foreign policy success during his nearly 4 years in office. But what exactly was this normalization of relations between UAE, Bahrain, and Israel? What does it mean?
Well, first, let's start with what they decided to name it, because I think that sheds light on what's happening here. The Abraham Accords, which is a semantics ploy, really, to try to paint that the conflict, and that's even a light word, it's not even the right word, but what's happening in the region as some kind of a religious and fratricidal conflict between the children of Abraham, and that is not it at all. What you have is a settler colonial apartheid regime that is inflicting unimaginable pain and oppression and denying freedom to the indigenous people of the land, the indigenous Palestinians. And what we saw with the Trump display on Tuesday is, yes, it was put forth by Trump, and proclaimed as a triumph for Trump, but it's been something that's also pushed by previous United States administrations, and that's trying to get Arab countries to normalize relations with Israel. What happened is they did sign, the governments of Bahrain, the United Arab Emirates, and Israel signed a deal to normalize relations without Israel being willing to do anything to guarantee the human rights and the freedom of the Palestinian people. And that is a sham. They're putting it forth as some kind of progress towards peace. But what it really is signing an impunity deal, continuing to give Israel impunity for all of the violations it commits. And that is not a recipe for peace. That is a recipe for entrenching and expanding Israel's settler colonial regime and for more human rights abuses.
So when describing this agreement, is Trump or are any of his supporters casting it as some sort of peace deal?
That's exactly what we're seeing them cast as.
And it's not like Israel. It's not like Israel was at war with Bahrain or the UAE. There was no real conflict there.
Exactly. They were never at war. What it was is the Arab and Islamic countries trying to previously put pressure on Israel to end its occupation and colonization of Palestinian lands by not normalizing relations with Israel. And that has historically been the position of Arab countries. In fact, all of the countries in the Organization of Arab States in 2002 presented Israel with a comprehensive peace deal saying we are willing to normalize relations with you if you end the occupation of Palestine, of only 22% of historic Palestine. So if you end the occupation of the West Bank and Gaza, we are willing to give you full diplomatic and other normalization. And now we saw what we saw on Tuesday and before that with the agreements is the governments. And let me say, it is just the governments, the autocratic rulers of Bahrain and the United Arab Emirates, not the people that signed deals with Israel to normalize relations with nothing in exchange. So again, it's rewarding Israel instead of sanctioning Israel. This comes precisely at a time when the global civil society movement for boycott, divestment, and sanctions is on the rise. And we're seeing unions and organizations and colleges, student bodies, taking action to divest and to boycott from those entities that are supporting Israel's occupation and colonial apartheid practices. And we have, you know, now we see these Arab countries breaking away from that. So it's a real shame. But most of us that have been working on Palestinian human rights, I think the Palestinians for sure, and I bet also the citizens of these regimes, the Bahrain and the United Arab Emirates, recognize that this is nothing more than a deal for military equipment to increase militarization and cybersecurity deals between these countries that will only serve to increase war and oppression.
And I want to talk about the weapons sales part of it in just a moment, but just to interject, I was born and raised in the United Arab Emirates, and I grew up in this country where Israel was basically never mentioned in the maps. You know, it had just completely ignored. They made sure it never showed the word Israel. The Star of David was banned. This is how I grew up in this country. And there were a lot of Palestinians in, and still are, there. Everything changed in 1991 when the U.S. began fighting the Gulf War in Iraq, and you saw military bases, and the UAE became a closer and closer ally of the United States. And I'm sort of wondering how Palestinians in the diaspora living in UAE and Bahrain might be seeing what the governments of those countries are doing as sort of selling out to Israel and to the United States. And I actually want to play for you and our audience, Hueda, a clip of what Trump said about Palestinians this week while he was hailing these so-called Abraham Accords. He has cut off U.S. aid to Palestinians, and apparently it's because they are disrespecting us.
Saying nice things for many years, and nobody's ever done this before, but I stopped payment. It's a term that's used for a lot of things. It's called we stop payment. Because if they're not going to respect us, or if they're not going to speak well of us, we're not going to be involved. They, I think, are seeing what's happening, and we've been given very strong signals that they'd like to be a part of what's happening. So I think we'll see the Palestinians at some point, but before we see them.
And so Trump sort of saying at some point down the road, maybe we'll consider thinking about the Palestinians in the meantime, because they disrespect the U.S., the aid has been cut off. However, how is this being seen and felt by Palestinians in the diaspora and in the territories?
It is being seen exactly for what it is, and that is a sham peace ploy. It is a fodder for Donald Trump's election campaign and to bolster an embattled and criminally indicted and a war criminal, Benjamin Netanyahu. The protests against Netanyahu have been ceaseless. By Israeli citizens for other reasons, but nevertheless, Netanyahu is in trouble in his own country, and Donald Trump is in trouble in this country and trying to divert attention from all his mistakes and the large number of American citizens that are dying because of his horrific leadership. And so he wants to present some kind of win, and for him, this is it, though the effects of that is going to be more war and more oppression and more violence. And to try to say that the Palestinian people are disrespecting. I mean, the Palestinian people have been friends of the American people, have been, the Palestinian leadership has consistently been trying to work with the United States, but not at the expense of the freedom for the Palestinian people. So while the Palestinians need aid, because Israel has turned Palestine into a very aid-dependent society, because it controls all the borders, it controls Palestinian movement, and it imposes unimaginable restrictions on Palestinians' access to necessities like water. So it's turned the Palestinian areas into a very aid-dependent society. And yet Palestinians are not willing to sacrifice our dream for freedom for some pennies thrown at us by the United States. Even if this means cutting off aid, as the United States did, to the UN Refugee Agency, which helps to feed and clothe and school millions of Palestinian refugees. These are punitive measures by the United States, cutting off the meager millions that it gives to Palestinians while continuing to give Israel $3.8 billion a year in taxpayer money that all goes to the Israeli military that imposes this colonialism and apartheid, and meanwhile blaming the Palestinians for their oppression that the United States is funding. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. And my hope is the Palestinian people see beyond that. You asked about the Palestinians in the diaspora, specifically in these two Arab countries that have normalized very much against it, but they can't say anything in these countries because of the level of repression in these Arab countries. But in countries in Europe and the United States where we have a little bit more freedom, it is our duty and obligation to speak up and to show that we are opposed. Palestinians were not part of this deal. You can't have a deal, any kind of peace deal, without involving the Palestinians. And involving the Palestinians means an end that is freedom for Palestine. And so we raise our voices against it, and we continue to mobilize on the ground with our allies, peace and justice seeking people around the world, in order to eventually push for the isolation of Israel to the extent, or until Israel begins to dismantle the regime that it has built, that is based on supremacy to the exclusion of the indigenous Palestinian people's rights.
So certainly the U.S. doesn't have any problem getting involved with repressive and authoritarian nations as long as they're allies. The same criticism it levels at countries like Cuba or Venezuela are apparent in nations like the UAE or Saudi Arabia or and Bahrain. And of course, a lot of it has to do with the fact that these are weapons buyers. Let's talk about, was UAE and Bahraini access to American weapons a formal part of the deal, or sort of a verbal, maybe down the line will open the way for it? And also, how is Israel viewing this, given that Israel relies on being militarily supreme in the region?
I'm glad you bring that up, because what we have is the UAE, which is responsible for one of the worst humanitarian crises on the planet today, entering into a deal that is guaranteed to bring it more military, more sophisticated weapons to continue to attack the people of Yemen that are not only being bombed with US-made weapons now, but that are also being starved. And
that's a separate issue in Yemen, the war in Yemen, which has never entered seemingly Trump's thought process.
Not at all. And at the same time, you have these countries that also target their human rights activists. And Israel is very proficient at creating and developing these cybersecurity engines that target human rights activists. And this is also a concern that's being very not talked about, but this will only increase the ability of these autocratic regimes to target human rights activists in their countries, the very activists that are pushing for the democratization of their societies and the respect for human rights in their societies. Certainly the people of Bahrain that have been fighting for freedom and equality since 2012 and have been brutally attacked by the Bahraini regime. And also the people of the UAE that do not have freedom of expression at all. And this is a concern, me being a human rights lawyer, that these governments are now going to have more access to the ability to spy, to identify some of these activists, and to target them with more repression. Israel is concerned that it maintains its military supremacy in the region, and therefore it is not going to allow any kind of weapon sales to the United Arab Emirates to jeopardize that. Therefore, it will have, I believe, informal kind of oversight about what is approved to the United Arab Emirates and I don't think Israel feels that they're going to be jeopardized. Their military supremacy in the region is going to be jeopardized in any way.
I imagine that if Israeli military supremacy were truly being jeopardized, the U.S. would not be overseeing this agreement. Trump would not have signed it with these nations because Trump has been so clearly biased in favor of Israel. Let's talk about the protests that took place outside the White House on the day that Trump held his triumphant photo op. You and other activists were on Black Lives Matter Plaza, the newly renamed street outside the White House. I understand there were a number of pro-Trump groups there as well, pro-Israel groups. Tell me what happened.
Yes, as you say, a number of us gathered to raise our voices in opposition to this deal. It was very spirited and loud, and all of the emotions that were expressed and the words that were said were against any kind of normalization without Palestine's liberation. And it is recognizing that you cannot have peace without the Palestinian people. And we thought it important to be there. We realized we weren't going to be thousands because of the time that we had to put this together, and also significantly because of the time that we were in with COVID. But we did gather probably a couple of hundred of us and made our voices loud. And we marched and encountered some pro-Trump Zionists with signs clearly saying Zionists for Trump that were started yelling profanities at us. There was a brief exchange, but for the most part, we realized that these extremists that are promoting Trump's agenda and Zionist supremacy are not our target. The target is people all over the world that buy in to this farce that what Trump is doing and the deal that was signed is moving us any closer to peace. But more important than the numbers that were there, significant numbers, but more importantly, are the number of organizations that signed on to our statement and that co-sponsored this rally and the message that we stand opposed to any kind of normalization with Israel until Palestine is free. And we had well over 55 organizations with more still signing on, from religious, cultural, Jewish, Arab, human rights organizations, Christian organizations. And that is significant because our work is continuing with this kind of base. The organizations represented tens of thousands of people in the United States, all allied to say that we are going to continue our work on the ground, mobilizing in our communities to boycott, divest, and sanction Israel until it respects Palestinian rights and international law. And so whatever took place at the White House, whatever charade that was, that is not going to detract. We've registered our opposition loud and clear, and that is not going to detract from our work because there should be no normalization with apartheid and colonization. Period.
Let's actually watch a short video. This is actually part of a Facebook Live video that you did while you were at Black Lives Matter Plaza on Tuesday. Here's a short excerpt to give our audience a sense of what it looked like and sounded like.
Zionist Organization of America.
Terrorists! Terrorists! Free, free Palestine! Free, free Palestine!
And that's a short clip from a video that my guest Huwaida Araf took on Tuesday at outside the White House, where a number of organizations had gathered to demand no normalization of relations between Israel and Bahrain and the United Arab Emirates. And we saw some Israel flags and even a sign that said Jews for Trump. Huwaida, you and your fellow activists were chanting free, free Palestine. I noticed somebody from the other side use the word terrorists. What was the interaction? Was there any interaction between the two sides?
There was some briefly back and forth, but they aren't going to listen to us what we had to say. They were interested in yelling at us and calling us terrorists, specifically based on who we are. And all we were calling for, free Palestine. So we're calling for freedom and respect for human rights. And to them, that is a threat and synonymous with terrorism. So this is sad, and I think representative of the mentality that sustains Israel's policies. And this is some of the things that we have to break down. But before we do that, I think we reach to the people that just don't know enough and have been taken over the years by a very sophisticated media campaign to paint Israel as the victim rather than the Palestinian people that have been colonized and brutalized for decades. And that's where our work will continue. And these radicals are the same ones that are, you know, in the streets opposing equal rights and reform in policing for Blacks. These are the people that are calling for masks to be taken off and that are calling COVID a hoax. These are the people that oppose, you know, total equality and Black Lives Matter. And we think that we are the majority, those that are calling for Black Lives Matter, Indigenous rights, immigrant rights, justice. It is a justice that is, we believe, a message that is more widespread, that represents more people, and we have to unite ourselves more in order to be more heard and to be able to impose the solutions that we need that will lead us to a more peaceful world.
And then finally, you mentioned media. There was plenty of media coverage of what was happening inside the White House. Did you get any media coverage, you know, outside of the progressive programs like this one? Was there any mainstream media coverage of the opposition to this White House deal, to these Abraham Accords, and the protests that you did outside?
We are not, there were a lot of cameras, to tell you the truth, and we did a number of interviews. We have not yet followed how they have all been spun, but I will tell you that there were also cameras from Bahrain and from the United Arab Emirates that were not allowed to cover our protests.
Wow.
And we were told by citizens of these countries that they are embarrassed and that they are sorry for what's happening. And therefore, we know that what the governments are doing is not in the name of the people. And in the name of the people, we will continue to work for a true peace, which is based on freedom, dignity, and equal rights for all.
Huwaida, I want to thank you as always for joining us today. Appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me, Sonali.
My guest has been Huwaida Arraf, a Palestinian-American lawyer and human rights activist, co-founder of the International Solidarity Movement, former chair of the Free Gaza Movement. She's also the Palestine and Refugees Correspondent for our program. We've been discussing President Trump's triumphant Middle East agreement and what it really means. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.